Okay. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode. We have a very special guest today. My guest is Debbie Homewood, who is a psychotherapist, logotherapist, spiritual teacher, some might say, and all-around great person. So thank you very much for joining me.
A pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
So today, I think that one of your areas of expertise is to help people find meaning in their life. And it's an area that I think a lot of people contend with and are not really sure how to even approach just dealing with the topic, right? I mean, people will try and find meaning in their relationships. They try to find meaning in their work. They try to find meaning in their soul. And it's a really tough go for some people, right? And so I think that maybe we can start off the conversation today with just a little bit about how meaning features as a as a function in a person's life. Mm-hmm. And then we can, you know, we'll move on to just talk about how maybe people can go about trying to discover meaning in their lives, what it means for them. And yeah, how's okay. that sound?
That sounds great, Shane. So the importance of meaning was really brought to our attention in the field of psychology and in the field of human experience and the field of spirituality by one of the founding fathers of psychology, Viktor Frankl. And he had these kind of basic tenets that he believed were absolutely true and spent his life sharing with the mental health and psychological community. And that, I think that's where I need to start in terms of understanding where meaning features. So first of all, Frankl was a contemporary of Freud and Jung. And he was younger, but they were very much in touch with each other. And he was very supportive of the work they were doing. But he said, man is not merely physical and merely psychological. Man is also spiritual. And by spiritual, what he meant was that we have a part of our being that is more than the physical, more than the brain, and more than the psychological, more than the personality, more than the traits of our psyche. And he called that the human spirit. But what's interesting about it is he said it's this non-physical energy that is the essential part of what it means to be a human being. And when he was teaching and researching and writing and studying, we didn't have a field of medicine called neuroscience, but we do today.
Right.
It's a new field, neuroscience. And the field came into being about 30 years ago. When it came into being as a recognized field of medicine, there was no agreed upon definition of mind.
Right.
Very interesting, right?
Yeah.
Neuroscience studies the relationship between the brain and the mind. But when the field of neuroscience came into being, there was no agreed upon definition of mind. So a conference was called in California of all the people working in that field. And they had 5 days and they had one goal. At the end of the fifth day, they had to have an agreed upon definition of mind that would be used in the field of neuroscience.
Right.
So here's the layman's version of the definition.
Okay.
Mind, the capacity of human awareness to direct and control information and energy.
Right.
So mind is awareness and it has the ability to control information and energy. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then
neuroscience went on using that definition in this wonderful field studying the relationship between the physical brain, the little gray cells, and mind, okay? And early in the 21st century, they made a declaration, and they said, no matter how you dissect the brain, no matter how you scan it, analyze it, slice it, study it, observe it, you will not find the mind in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The mind is separate from, more than, and works with the brain. That's right. What Frank called the spirit.
Yeah.
That's what Frankl called the spirit, that we are an essence of consciousness, an essence of awareness. So once we look at it's how you view the human being.
Right.
Right. What's really important, what I'm talking about here. So the human being is physical, is psychological, and is spiritual, is this consciousness or this awareness. And you don't have to be religious in any way to accept that you have this mind, right? Because it's not a religious concept. It's a concept helping us understand what it means to be a human being. Then Frankl said, honey, so from that position, then Frankl said, human beings' greatest need is to find meaning, and that's the need of the spirit.
Right. Now, right? Yeah.
Go ahead. No, please.
No, so Frankl spent a lot of time in a concentration camp, right, in his formative years, four years. Just to give a bit of context on, like, why he was searching for meaning and where that came from, is that, you know, he watching his family die in the concentration camps and prisoners being executed and all that kind of thing. I think one of the things he said in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, was that there were two kinds of people primarily, which were those who had given up on life and those who hadn't. And those who hadn't had found some way to incorporate meaning into their suffering and into their existence, which gave them a reason to keep going, right? And I think what's really interesting about what you've said now about the human spirit is that, at least for me, like, what I can identify as a feature of my, you know, existence is that function of awareness, where that's separate from thoughts and emotions and physical pains and things like that, where you can be conscious of things. And, well, I think the hard part, at least for me, is the making the choices based on that awareness, but primarily that the awareness is actually primary for
what you are.
It's what you are.
And you're more than the thoughts. Thoughts are real.
Right.
You're more feelings. Feelings are real.
Of course.
But you're more than that. And so Frankl says, first of all, we're spiritual beings. Then he says the most important need is to find meaning. And he called it, his name for it was the will to meaning. Mm-hmm. We have this driving force in our essence, our spirit, our mind, that drives us to find meaning. It's our most important need to find meaning in life, in suffering, and in death. That's right. Then you've hit on the third point, Shane. Then he said, at that level of that awareness or that consciousness or that being, we have something that he called freedom of will.
Mm-hmm.
And now, again, layman's term, the spirit has the ability to choose. The spirit always has the ability to choose how we, our relationship to our feelings, our relationship to our thoughts, our attitude towards a certain situation, what values we're going to try to express, manifest, seek, and find in a situation. We have freedom of will. The psyche, our psychological self, doesn't have a lot of freedom of will. It's very impacted by a lot of things that take away its freedom and that control it. Our body doesn't have a lot of freedom, honey. It's genetically controlled and environmentally impacted, but the spirit has freedom of will. And he said, and he taught us, nothing can take that away from us, but we can be blocked from it. Mm-hmm. We can be blocked from it by illness or disease or circumstances. And we always need to be seeking to reconnect with it, because when we have that sense of, I am that mind, I am that awareness, I am that spiritual being, we then can exercise that freedom of will. We can start to learn how to make choices. And the most important choice to make always is, how can I find meaning?
Right.
And the circumstances in this situation, in my life, in the suffering and death. I'm going to give you an example from a client.
Please.
Okay. So this is a lovely Jewish lady, born and raised in Russia, very hard life, immigrated to Israel with her husband, had her children, immigrated to Canada. Okay. So she's been here many, many years now. She's in her mid-60s. She's now suffering with a number of challenging physiological conditions. Okay. And She hates that she has these. She's always been Superwoman. She wants to continue to be Superwoman. Right. She's really mad that she's got these physical limitations that are affecting her, and she fights it. So Passover's coming, right? Mm-hmm. It's important to her. Her sons, their wives, her grandchildren. Her grandchildren are the most important source of meaning in her life. Am I going to be well enough to make the meal? Even if we have to do it socially distanced, even if we have to do it Zoom, however, am I going to be well enough? What if I'm not well enough? What if I can't have the energy, right? And she was not doing well at the time. So her one son and his wife are talking to her on FaceTime on last Friday. And they say, Mom, we're coming Sunday. And she hadn't committed to it because she didn't know if she was going to be well enough, right? She hadn't committed to it. But when they said, we're coming, now, what does that mean, right? To her spirit, what does that mean? My faith is very important to me, and it's an important source of meaning. I'm not well. How many more Passovers will I have with my family? This is very precious. It's COVID. I don't get to have any connection with my family very often. I want to share these important rituals and these observances in my faith with my grandchildren. My grandchildren love my cooking. They're fussy little eaters, but they always eat my food.
Right.
She did, Shane. She did what Frankl called transcendence. She transcended her suffering, her fears, her anxiety about will I be well enough for the meaning that she would get from doing Passover on the Sunday. And she did it. And then she said to me on Tuesday, she said to me, I went to bed that night so exhausted, in so much pain, and I didn't even know it because my heart was bursting.
Right.
My heart was bursting.
That's amazing.
Now, finding meaning, okay? That she was aware enough to know if she didn't find a way to do it, she was going to deprive herself of all that meaning. Now, can you imagine how she'd have felt if she went to bed Sunday night not having done it?
Right. If she is now, is that where the block comes in?
Because it's not so much. Well, if she'd given in to the physical ailments,
yeah,
would have blocked the meaning for sure. It would have blocked the meaning, and she'd have gone to bed depressed, full of regret, probably full of guilt. Okay, knowing she could never get that back again. Okay, and devoid of meaning from that day. That's called existential suffering, honey. When we cannot find a way to find meaning in our life, our existence becomes the source of our suffering. And it's just about the worst suffering that we can find. And we know from research around suicide, it's when life has lost meaning, when the person can no longer find those avenues to meaning. Life becomes meaning. Their existence is meaningless.
Right.
And then life, it's not worth living.
So, okay. So I have a bunch of questions. All right. So firstly, with this client, right, it reminds me of, you know, I think it was Nietzsche who said something about, you know, if you know why you're doing something, then you can bear anyhow. You know what it takes to get there. Mm-hmm. And so so if you have that meaning and you can find a reason to do what you're doing, you'll be willing to push through whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. Right? Pain, suffering, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day you know why you're doing it and it's that important to you.
Right? It had purpose, it had value, it gave life meaning. It was more important than the suffering.
Right. Now, did she, and does one in general, did she make this meaning, or was it like a discovery of meaning?
So there's, we do both, honey.
Okay.
Filling our being with meaning. Okay. From working with meaning and logotherapy and working as a psychotherapist for 35 years, I know that we have an obligation to feed ourselves with meaning every day. right? Do we brush our teeth every day? Hell yeah. Can we live without our teeth? Yep.
Right.
No. Okay. Yeah. But we take the responsibility to feed ourselves with meaning every day. And it's both creating and discovering, honey. Okay. It's both. So meaning is unique to every individual. In other words, what is meaningful to you will be very different than what is meaningful to another individual. But we know a lot about where meaning comes from in a generic kind of sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we can be out walking on a beautiful early morning and experience the sunrise and hear the first call of spring birds and just stop, and it can take our breath away. Right. And we've discovered meaning in that moment. Something about that moment touched our spirit, and it was a discovery of meaning. Okay. We didn't create meaning in the moment, but we were present and aware, and something touched our soul. So Frankl would call that experiential, right? You're not doing anything to make the meaning happen, but you're there and you experience meaning. It can be hearing a beautiful song. It can be looking at a beautiful sunrise. It can be seeing a baby smile. It can be enjoying a beautiful piece of art that someone's showing you or that you've come across, right? You are witnessing something that touches your being and fills you with meaning. It's passive in that sense. It's a discovery of mm-hmm. meaning in that situation. However, we also have this phenomenal capacity to create meaning through things that we do. Now, doing can be work that we do. It can be a creative thing that we do. It can be creative cooking, creative gardening, creative visual arts, creative music, creative woodwork. It can be through the doing. And Frankl didn't limit it to any kind of doing, because many people find meaning in the work that they do. Right. And it can be quite simple work, or it can be very highly skilled work. OK, I'm sure a pediatric cardiac surgeon who repairs a valve in a 3 week old baby leaves that operating room with a profound sense of meaning.
Right.
OK, so there's the experiencing and there's the doing. And then there's a third generic avenue, honey. And it's, again, creating, okay? And it's what you were talking about in the prisoner of war camps with the two types of people, okay? Frankl taught us that an incredibly important source of meaning is derived from the choice of attitude we make in a situation, the choice of our attitude towards a situation. So in the camps, Frankl did not see himself as a powerless victim. Mm-hmm. He saw himself as a free agent empowered to choose how he was going to deal with that situation. And he said, the Germans can take everything away from me. They shaved every hair off his body. They tattooed him. They starved him. They beat him. They tortured him. He had no control over that. But what they couldn't take away from him is his freedom to choose how he was, what the attitude he was going to take, his stance, how he was going to handle that. And every single day, his most important mission was to find meaning that day. Okay. And that's the attitude he took towards this. I'm not a victim. They can't take that away from me. I'm free. And they, no one can take that away from me. That attitude saved his life. And he taught that to so many people. It saved many other people's lives there. So we can always choose our attitude when we know that we are that mind, that awareness, right, being, and we have freedom of will. And so this is a double pronged one. And mm-hmm. our core values, the things that we truly value in life, are a huge and important source of meaning. And if we can seek to manifest a value that's very, very important to us, seek to find the value, seek to represent the value, seek to advocate for the value in a situation, that will be a source of meaning. So if I'm dealing with my 3-year-old granddaughter and she's having temper tantrums, if I can remember to choose patience with her, then I'm finding meaning in that moment, because I'm expressing in my treatment of her something that I highly value. patient respect for another human being. And that makes that difficult moment meaningful to me. It's still a difficult moment. But you see, one of Frankl's greatest teachings, Shane, was there will always be suffering in life. There's always going to be suffering, but you have to be able to find meaning even in the suffering. Now, am I suffering when she's having a tantrum? A little bit. I mean, there's suffering and suffering on a scale of 1 to 10, it's -4.
Sure.
I'd rather she wasn't having a tantrum. But if I can choose patience and respect for her in that moment, then there's meaning in that moment for me because I'm making a choice about something that's what? Important to me. Something that's important to me, something that means something to me, something that matters to me, something that changes how I experience that situation.
But now, how does one go about doing that beyond just the intellectual acceptance or the like reformation of the situation? Because I find like for myself, a lot of the time when I encounter a difficult situation, as you say, which happens, you know, just about every day on a small scale and every now and then on big scales, is like I can recognize a lot of the time that like, oh, okay, there are many ways that I can choose to interpret this situation, right? And as you said, it doesn't necessarily alleviate any of the pain or the suffering, but it transforms whether you accept the situation, which I think is definitely at least the first step, is you got to accept the real.
But the situation is affecting you, honey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, with the crying child or whether, you know, just things aren't working out or you lost your job or you can't figure anything out, there's multiple ways of viewing that, right? Mm. And that's, and you know, as we've been saying, like that's where you find your choice of meaning, right? Mm. And so how do you move past just the like, because I find myself, and I've spoken to people about it, where it's like, oh, well, I can say to myself, oh, this is, it's fine that this is happening or that, you know, it doesn't really matter or I should choose it. I should interpret this differently, but like the actual feeling component of it doesn't really change. And so that like throws that off a little bit.
You hit the nail on the head. Meaning is something we feel. Right. Okay. And so in a situation where there's suffering or stress or distress, like losing your job, we have to really work. We have to do the work to find meaning in that situation. Does that mean you're going to be happy about losing your job? Probably not. Does that mean it's going to take all the stress away from losing your job? Definitely not. But it's an added dimension to that we can use to relate to the experience. Okay, so if I were working with a client that was very distressed because they'd lost their job, I would first of all take the time to validate their pain and provide any techniques I could to help them kind of manage the stress that it was causing. But then we go to the meaning, okay? And it's a very gentle process of leading them with questions to help them begin to develop the awareness to look at it differently so that they can actually begin to feel differently about it. One of the things I would say is when they were ready and I felt the time was right, I'd ask them to explore, what did you learn from this experience? Mm-hmm. What are the lessons? What have you learned about you? What have you learned about what's important to you? What have you learned about relationships? What have you learned about what kind of work you like to do and not do? What have you learned that works and doesn't work? What are the lessons that you can pull from this really difficult situation? How can we look at this situation as something that can change you, not in a negative way, but in a beneficial way? That will help you grow, understand yourself better, help motivate you to learn new skills that maybe you didn't realize that you needed or that you now understand are important. Okay. And because they're now unemployed, I would do a lot of work with them about what is it that you would like to be doing that would feed you with meaning going forward. Having learned from this difficult experience, Let's see if we can figure out how that can guide you in choices that you're going to make going forward. What is really meaningful to you in a workplace? What is intolerable to you in a workplace? And can we, again, learn from that? Okay. And Frankl said, Shane, that when we can do that kind of work and we get an insight, we get an understanding and we feel it, it lands. It's like, oh, yeah, that's true. Okay. That is something that is ours then forever. And no one can take it away from it and from us. And he called that a nugget of gold.
Right. Okay.
And he said, if we could imagine inside each human being, there's like, he called it a silo, right? A silo on a farm that you put food in for the animals for the winter. We have a silo inside of us. And through life, we want to be filling that silo with nuggets of gold. Things that we've experienced, things that we've learned, things that we cherish, things that are precious, okay? A week ago, I was the first person to get my four-month-old grandson to laugh out loud, okay? That's a nugget of gold in my silo.
Yeah.
That's happened. No one can take that away from me, okay? 20 years ago, my brother, who was 1 year younger than I was, died in my arms, okay, from cancer. I have hundreds of nuggets of gold from that experience in my silo that no one can take away from me. A horrendous, painful experience. He was born on my first birthday. He was my first birthday present. We were like this all our lives. And he died 4 days before his eldest daughter graduated from high school, you know? And he was in my arms as he passed away. So horrible suffering. Yeah. But my silo has a whole layer of nuggets of that, okay? So, you know, a person loses their job, but if we can really work with that and really feel into it, what was going on there? What have I learned from this? What have I learned about life, about my expectations of life, about me, about how I handle things? These are nuggets of gold that change us and change our life, honey. And we're filling up the silo. And Frankl used to say, we should sit every once in a while and just play with those nuggets of gold.
Right. And that, I mean, what's really, you know, interesting is that I've noticed just in observing myself and other people that, like, often the most seemingly bad situations in people's lives turn out to be one of their greatest assets, right? Some of the best gold that they've gotten. And yeah, of course, it depends on what that situation is, and it's complicated when there's tragedy involved, especially to, like, allow yourself to have that, not benefit, but like to get that gold, as we say, you know, from a terrible situation. But it really, like, as it could be the best thing that happens to you. Someone who loses their job, right? This might be the catalyst to finding what they didn't even know was possible, but they had to go through this change.
Michael's an example, honey.
Yeah.
So he have chosen to spend 4 years in a concentration camp.
No.
Nobody would choose that, right?
Right.
But now, was there a nugget of gold in that for him? There was a massive boulder of gold. And do you know what it was? Do you know what it was, Shane? On the day he was liberated by the Americans, which was the last day of the war, and he was like, he weighed 95 pounds and he was full of typhoid. And I mean, he was a wreck, right?
Yeah.
Eggered out through the gates, out into freedom. And he looked up at the sky and he said, I was right.
Right.
We're beings. Our greatest need is to find meaning. We do have freedom of will. And I know I'm right because I just proved it in hell. And
right.
Never tell me I'm wrong. And because he knew from those 4 years of suffering that he was absolutely right, he spent the next 50 years teaching the world that. Mm-hmm. Was there a goal for him out of those concentration camps? Would he have had that conviction?
No, or not without it.
Absolute certainty that he was right and could therefore change the world because of that? Yes.
Right, and it's extraordinary because, I mean, it's a little bit weird to think of it like this, but it's true, is that, like, well, so many people's lives have been saved by his work, but that wouldn't have happened if he wasn't a prisoner and if his family weren't killed and all these terrible things that happened to him ultimately created this like
certainty.
Yeah.
True.
Exactly. And that he could use to help people. Because without it, there's that sense of like a lack of like, oh, you're just sort of saying things, you know.
Armchair philosophy. Armchair philosophy here.
This is experience and it's like definitive. And he was like, nope, I know, I did it, I proved it. So let me tell you what's up. You know, let me show you how to get it.
Exactly, honey.
So now let's just to take a step back a sec. You spoke about like what blocks people from doing this earlier. You spoke about that it's possible that like our physical being or our emotional being or, you know, circumstances in life can block you from finding this meaning. What are some of the ways that people can firstly recognize that there is this block? Because surely in the recognition, that's most of the work anyway. But I mean, it's not most of the work, but it's like, well, that's where you'll figure out your answer.
Without that awareness of it, nothing can happen. But with it, you're 90% of the way there.
Right. And then, so once you have that awareness, which I'm assuming is just like an innate function of a human being, right? Is that everyone has awareness.
Everyone can understand the importance of it and learn to put their focus of attention in the awareness as opposed to in other things.
Right. And you don't even have to know that that's what you're doing really to do it.
Right.
It just happens.
You get more bang for your buck if you know what you're doing.
Right. You can.
If you don't.
Right. You can skip a few steps. So a lot of times people will run into that difficulty of being blocked. And like, there's also, I think, a lot of like blockage that happens by your thoughts and emotions where the suffering seems too great to find meaning. Right. But that, again, that's just then your interpretation of what's happening. Whereas someone who has more awareness or, you know, however you would want to phrase it, they would look at the situation from like a different perspective and say, well, something maybe they would say like, well, I don't exactly know why I'm going through this suffering right now, right? But perhaps I trust that there is a huge benefit or there's some benefit from it that I can get and that it's still worth going through, right? Even though if you don't know at the time what's happening, I mean, you know what's happening, but you don't know why it's happening, that you can still hold on to that idea of like, or maybe you don't hold on to an idea. Maybe it's more like, as we've been saying, you find the meaning in it at the time, right?
Or you just realize you're blocked and you get help with the block so that you can find the meaning.
Right. So did Viktor Frankl, when he was in the camps, right, he was kind of putting this all together in his head, presumably, right?
He had it pretty much together before he got there, honey.
Oh, he did?
He did. He had the basic framework of logotherapy worked out, was actually practicing it in his clinics in Vienna, okay? So Now he had it to test.
Oh, that's interesting. So he didn't find this in the camps. He found this before and then proved it essentially in the camps.
Exactly. Right. Can I come back to the blocks for a second?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So in my work as a psychotherapist, I do one area that I do a huge amount of work in is and loss, okay, and trauma, okay? Now, so a definition of grief. Grief is the pain we experience when there's a loss. We don't just grieve when someone dies, but if we lose a job, if we have to move away from the hometown we grew up in, when our kids all leave and go to university, when a pet dies, all kinds of losses, honey, all kinds. When you move from South Africa and you leave behind family and friends, right? Right. The losses. we experience the pain of grief with every loss. Okay. Okay. And the grief varies depending on the loss and on the individual, but it can be incapacitating. All right. Now, there's always meaning to be found in grief, but in general, we don't understand grief very well. We all know one thing about grief, and that is that it hurts like hell.
Yeah.
And that are very afraid of that pain, and most of us will do anything to avoid it. And the pain of grief can become a block to finding the meaning. And in the grief work that I do, honey, the first thing I do is help people understand what they're experiencing. I teach them about grief. I teach them about why they're feeling what they're feeling, so that they begin to understand it and become less afraid of it, and can then begin the journey of through grief, where there's more awareness of it. And with that awareness, they can begin to find meaning.
Right.
Okay. So that's one area where the pain of the loss can become a block.
Mm-hmm.
And it blocks them from finding meaning. Another area that I work in is with trauma. And trauma is much more widespread than we thought when we were first understanding trauma in the field of psychology. And a person can get a diagnosis of cancer, and that can be traumatic. A person can give birth, and there can be some moments of terror or high risk in the birthing process, and there's trauma, residual trauma after that. Okay. All kinds of situations can cause trauma, more than being in war or being in a 9/11 experience, right? It's much, much more widespread. Now, something important to understand about trauma. Trauma happens when the danger and threat and lack of safety and lack of control are so overwhelming in a moment that the way that the brain and psyche respond is to go into a mode called freeze. First, we go into fight or flight in a scary situation. But when the situation is overwhelming, we can't handle it, and the default setting is freeze. Freeze means we go numb in the moment. So we're now not overwhelmed with the pain, the terror, the anxiety, the threat, the danger. So we're numb, but we've frozen in all of that. We've frozen all of it in. It hasn't gone away. It's like flash freezing a peach at the peak of its ripeness. We freeze in all the vitamins and flavor and juice, okay?
Right.
Freeze in all the terror, trauma, lack of safety, lack of control. That's now a block.
Mm.
That's now a block.
Right. Because the response makes sense, right? Because, I mean,
That's a necessary response in that moment.
Yeah.
As that freeze moment is subsequently dealt with, what's frozen in will become a block to finding meaning in most parts of your life.
Right. And so the way through that is to resolve the trauma.
The trauma.
Right.
Okay, so there are real blocks, honey.
Very
real blocks. But it might require therapy. It might require education. It might require a retraining of certain kinds of things so that the blocks are being removed and the ability to find meaning is restored to the person. Right. You see a healthy child that hasn't had trauma and hasn't had profound illness, and you just watch them playing unobserved.
Yeah.
Every second is meaningful to that child. They're so engaged. They're so involved. They're so absorbed in what they're doing that they're just gorging on meaning.
Yeah.
Nothing's blocking them from finding meaning.
Right.
And we can restore that capacity to ourselves as adults, that ability to be open to the meaning of a moment or the meaning from deeper work, like finding the nuggets of gold and losing one's job.
Right. And the way to resolve, or I don't know if resolve is the right word, but the way to, you know, resolve trauma is ultimately to go through it with awareness.
Yeah, you need therapy. You need someone skilled in handling, in working with your trauma so that dealing with it doesn't re-traumatize you, but actually heals the trauma.
Right. And Ryan.
Your leg when you were 6 years old. Okay. If you broke your leg when you were six and it got set properly and it was all fine. If I x-rayed your leg when you were 46 years old, I could see exactly where that leg broke. All right. And that break would be the strongest part of that leg.
Right.
Now that can be true from trauma. There's always a scar. There's always going to be some trace of that trauma happened to you, but it doesn't have to be something that cripples you or destroys your life. It can become a strength if the trauma is healed in the right way.
Right. That's very interesting, is that it becomes the strongest part of whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Right. And then, you know, just to circle it around, it's like, well, there's meaning in that too. It's like, well, a lot of people suffer massive trauma and then the rest of their life is determined based on that. And for some people, it's just a great endless suffering because of it. And then for other people, they manage to transform it into something that they can use to have a positive impact on themselves and the world. And whether it's like advocacy or writing books or becoming an expert or changing, helping other people go through it who are in similar situations, that all comes down to, yeah, but also you have to have that trauma to go through it. Right. And exactly. So it's actually, there's a way to look at your trauma as like a training ground or a strengthening thing. Whereas like, well, you didn't really have control over it anyway, right? Most of the time, particularly if it's as kids or whatever it is, it's like, no, I mean, you know, we could debate how much choice kids have in things, but for the most part, shit happens to you. Then you got to deal with it. And even as an adult, like, the world's kind of like that, right? I mean, like, look at COVID. It's like, what are you going to do?
Like,
all this shit's just happening to you and everyone else, but that doesn't really matter. But then it's like, okay, well, now how do we take that and understand it and feel it and go through it properly to heal the trauma of it so that you can create meaning and a better world and environment for yourself and everyone else afterwards, right? And so so the main thing in terms of, like, you know, if I think about people who have just like ordinary people, everyone, let's say, has had some sort of like trauma in their life, right? Big or small. And then is there a way for people to like go at, I mean, to what's the right way, is like approach it just in themselves? Is it, can you do it like self-reflectively, or do you need someone who can, you know, do it with you?
If you have the desire, if you have the will, if you have the intention, and if you have some awareness, okay, the awareness is really key piece. If you have some awareness, you can take any difficult or painful situation that has occurred in your life, and you can now begin to explore it and look for the little nuggets of gold. Look for, you can ask all kinds of questions. What values were present in that situation? What choices did I or did I not make in that situation? What attitude did I take in that situation? Right? What gives me meaning? How can I lay that lens or filter over this situation and look for those little flecks of gold in that situation to understand better? And one of the most important things we can always be doing is growing, learning, being open to learn from every situation. Frankl said something lovely, honey. It's a wonderful quote. It's one of my favorite quotes. He said, life doesn't owe us pleasure. It offers us meaning. Life offers us meaning. Mental health does not come to those who demand happiness, but to those who find meaning. Happiness and pleasure are side effects of finding meaning. And that is absolutely true.
Right. You won't find meaning in happiness. You get happiness from finding meaning.
Exactly right. That's it in a nutshell. That is absolutely it. Life doesn't owe us pleasure, but it offers us meaning.
Right. So if there's too much pain,
yeah,
that's blocking people,
Like physical pain?
Or just emotional pain.
Pain, yeah.
How do you, then, is that at the, is it at that point that, you know, you would say it's like therapy is a good way to go through it?
Help, yeah. Go to a therapist, go to a life coach, go to a counselor, go to a psychiatrist, go on medications temporarily if you need to get enough calm and inner stability to begin to help yourself.
Right.
To begin to take those first steps that will help you reconnect with who you are, and that being that you are, how do you then find meaning in your mm-hmm. life? Okay. And so let me touch on a really useful tool for a moment, honey.
Yeah, sure, please.
Mindfulness meditation has become such a mainstream, universally offered approach for self-care,
yeah.
Right? Mindfulness programs are taught everywhere around the world. They're online. Before COVID, that you could go to a mindfulness-based stress reduction course virtually in any community, right? Mindfulness books, mindfulness gurus, mindfulness teachers. Why? Here's why, okay? Mindfulness meditation teaches many, many, many different techniques to help you experience and discover and strengthen your capacity to observe without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Observe your body. Observe what your physical senses are presenting you with. Observe your thoughts. Observe your feelings without judgment. And then, if you keep doing it, you're going to have this moment where you go, oh my God, I'm the observer.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Just a minute.
Yeah.
I'm never here. Now you know who your being is. You
right.
see, your essence. That's what Frankl called spirit. That's what neuroscience calls mind. You're the observer. Now, when you know that you're observer, you can take that and use that in so many places in your life, honey.
Yeah.
Places in your life.
Yeah, mindfulness has been extraordinary for me. I mean, it's just a different world, you know?
And that's the core value of it, that you begin to experience that I'm the observer. And when you are, then that's where freedom of will is. That's where you have the capacity to make choices that are going to offer you meaning. A lot of work I do with my clients is to help them become aware that in most situations, they're giving away their power of choice. They're giving away their opportunities to find meaning, right? They have developed these belief systems that things have to be a certain way, or a person has to act a certain way, or a thing has to unfold in a certain way, or they're miserable, they're unhappy, they're disrespected, they're hurt, they can't function, right? They give that power away to circumstances, to people, through all these expectations.
Right.
They're giving up their ability to choose. They've put their state of, excuse me, inner well-being in the hands of those circumstances or those people. So they've relinquished their freedom.
Right.
Okay? Unless it's sunny, I'm miserable.
Right.
Like, do I have the capacity to make sure it's sunny every day? I don't. Why would I give something I can't control or change the power to decide whether I'm happy or not?
Right.
Teaching people, helping people realize that they're doing that is often one of the first steps in helping people find meaning. But you are giving away your freedom of choice. You're giving that power to these people or circumstances, and they're things that you can't change. If there's a negative circumstance in your life and you can change it, change it. If it doesn't hurt you or someone else, change it. Of course, change it.
Yeah.
But the things in our life, we don't have the capacity to change. So are we going to give that the power to determine the state of our inner well-being? Most people do, honey, until they learn that they have the ability to not do that.
Right, you don't have to do it.
You don't have to do that. You can keep, so then they say to me, yeah, well, what do I do if this bad thing's happening, right? And so I teach them a technique. If this bad thing's happening and you cannot change it. You do not have the capacity to change that, okay? There is a different choice that you can make other than giving it power. It's called the three N's: non-attachment, non-reaction, non-resistance. You can choose, instead of standing here in relationship to that thing, just step over here.
Yeah.
Step over here. What you're doing is you're saying, I'm releasing any need for that to be different for me to be okay. In other words, I'm separating how I feel inside from that thing. I don't need that thing to be different for me to be okay. It just is. It's sunny. It's rainy. It's a blue sky. It's a gray sky. It has nothing to do with how I feel inside. I don't need it to be different for me to be okay. My okayness now no longer is dependent on that having to be a certain way. Non-attachment. You just release attachment. It is what it is. I can't change it. I'm therefore going to choose to not need it to be different for me to be okay. We actually can make that choice. And it is so liberating and empowering and freeing. Non-attachment, non-reaction. It's raining again.
Right.
Do I need to be upset? Do I need to react to the rain? I don't like that it's raining again.
Yeah.
But I have to react to it because I can't change it. And why give the rain the power to ruin my day? I don't need to give it the power to ruin my day. It just is what it is.
Right.
So I don't have to. I can just have no reaction to the fact that it's raining. Right.
Yeah.
It has lost its power. I'm in charge. The rain's not in charge. Non-attachment, non-reaction, non-resistance. Non-resistance means stop fighting things you can't change. Stop putting energy in it. Stop trying to make it different. Put all that beautiful energy into finding meaning where you can find it and let that go. Don't even think it's what it is. Non-attachment, non-reaction, non-resistance. And for some people, that's when the light bulb goes on. Oh my goodness. I don't have to give my power away like that. Oh my goodness. Choose a different relationship with it. And then they start exercising their freedom of will. And then they start having the experience, I can make choices that give me meaning, that protect my inner state of well-being. I'm in charge. I can do that. Oh, that's a beautiful day when a person gets that, honey. And sometimes that's my entree. That's the entry point to helping them realize they have that power.
Right. And it's so true because, you know, there'll be so many things every day that can cause you upset or whatever that you have no control over, but they don't have to bother you.
You're stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
Having a fit and having your blood pressure go up, being in a rage because the traffic's bad. The only person that's hurting is you. It's not going to clear up the traffic.
Right. And your anger at the rain isn't going to make it stop raining. It's just going to make you more angry.
We're not there yet. We don't have that kind of...
That would be quite something to just be angry and then be like, stop raining now, you know?
And we can do it with people. If we have a person in our life that has certain characteristics or traits that are irritating or annoying or frustrating, right? And we know that person's never going to change. We know they're not, okay? I mean, it could be a miracle, but aside from miracle, they're not going to change, okay? Yeah. When you know you're going to have to interact with that person, don't hand them the power on a silver platter to upset.
Right.
Before you see that person or talk to that person, say to yourself, okay, I want to remember non-attachment, non-reaction, non-resistance. I don't have any attachment to him being different. I don't need her to do things differently or react differently because that's who she is. I don't need it. I wish they were different. I would like it if they were different, but I have no need for them to be different for me to be okay. I'm not going to react when they do their same bullshit. It just is. And I'm not going to fight it.
And not going to let them determine my internal state.
Exactly right, honey. Exactly right. Yeah.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming to talk to me today. I know we're just a bit at the end of our time. I think it's been a really wonderful conversation. I could talk about meaning and talk to you for hours, I feel like. Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it and you sharing this with everyone.
Thank you for asking me, Shane.
if you would like, I can put like a link to your website and things like that where people can find you. And yeah, some of the articles that you've written that have been great as well.
Hey, thank
you. All right. Thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of your day and your happy Easter weekend.
Thank you very much. Take care. All the best.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, Debbie. Bye.
Thank you.